So, Brian, just to give the folks out there kind of the depth of experience, really, to put it in certain terms, that we have in the fantasy realm of things and being fantasy general managers and owners, when was the first time you had a fantasy baseball team, and was that the first fantasy team in general that you had?
I'm going to go ahead and answer that in reverse.
Go ahead. Can.
And my first league was a fantasy football league. I don't know how good I did in it. Probably not very well.
I've seen
it was a bit of a dweeb
football
in high school. So, and then I moved into fantasy baseball and I got a little bit more experienced, a little, you know, more technically savvy, researching the stats. I did a lot of that. So,
Brian here in studio was talking about how he can see me laughing at his jokes. I can also see him thinking with his hands as well.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of set that off. He does a lot. You know, he's not real sure what to do with his hands here in studio. Mine was actually reversed. I actually did have a fantasy baseball team first, and it would have been back. I don't know. I was probably in junior high. Joined a league with some people. Drafted Trevor Hoffman. Probably a little too high, but he was real
undoubtedly
good. It was the year after he came back from injury, and so I kind of made some believers. I got a lot of hisses and boos and what are you crazies at the draft. But did you ever have a live draft? How many live drafts have you done? You know, when you actually take the name and you put it up on the board?
You mean not online live draft?
No.
Okay, no,
in person.
I've only done one.
Oh.
And it was so much fun.
Oh, they're a blast.
Yeah, it was so much fun.
Really
it was hilarious.
The ridicule is instant.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is.
Exactly. And there's tone with it. I mean, online, you can type that ridicule pretty quickly, but you don't have the tone, the inflection
right
behind it to let them know that they're really a moron.
Right.
So, yeah.
But notice in Brian's comment, you let them know that you're really a moron.
Yeah.
So Brian is the one inflicting the judgment. Me, I was always the one that got judged and ridiculed. So that's where we're coming, but he's probably had some more success. Now let's talk about, we say all this, obviously, to talk about trades that we have made. This is the, as we sit here in our ivory basement, because this is the basement studios of KNSI where we're coming from, but
the
as we sit here, yeah,
the studio.
Exactly. Sit here talking about all of these trades that we would make, and obviously the first time we step foot in a general manager's office in Major League Baseball, at least for me, be the first time. So, so obviously we there's other things going on that maybe we don't know, but we're pretty informed. We're a smart couple
let's
of cats.
Honest.
Yeah, let's be honest. But anyway, our actual experience in trades comes from fantasy baseball, and I wanted to highlight the worst trades that we have made. Brian, you've actually got through Yahoo, shameless plug,
yep,
you've got like all of your transactions ever since 2006, which is awesome. What really sticks out there for you?
Yeah, as far as an awful trade?
Absolutely. Let's just go awful.
Boy, I just
need
think
to toot
this
our
one,
own horns here.
Yeah, this one just looks bad to me. I traded CC Sabathia in his prime, you know, in 2007.
You got a year on that? 2007?
Yep, and I traded him and Johnny Estrada. We all know how awesome he was.
Right.
To someone for Chad Tracy and Raul Ibanez. I mean, I just can't imagine why I'd want Chad Tracy on my team. No offense, but it's just like, eesh, that was kind of a weird one.
Now, is that the Chad Tracy that is the major league Chad Tracy? Because there's a minor leaguer floating around. Were you like, was this a dynasty league and you were maybe trying to look forward to the future?
You know, I wish I was thinking that brightly at the time, but no. This was the current,
right,
you know, left-handed pinch hitter Chad Tracy.
I could do one better for you.
Okay, sure.
We go back to Freddie Garcia,
uh-huh,
when he was a member of the White Sox. This was I remember this because I moved. This is when I went to college. So this was 2005. This would have been late summer 2005. I tried to trade Manny Ramirez,
mm-hmm,
for Freddie Garcia straight up.
Boy, I can't see
any
good reason for that.
Quality in that at all. I really thought I needed some pitching, and I must have been set on, you know, Hall of Fame, albeit, you know, marred by drug charge hitters.
Yeah.
You know, I must have been set on that. I must have had plenty of, you know, 100 RBI, 45 home run guys.
No, you were rolling in the RBIs.
Yeah. I must have been. So that was definitely one of my worst ones. And then a recent one, also a guy that was in the prime of his career, who's actually taking a step back and on a team that struggled a little bit. Shane Victorino, this was probably 2 years ago now.
He was doing well,
right,
then.
Shane Victorino for Everett Cabrera and a reliever that I don't even remember. I don't have all the trades in front of me. This one just always stuck out. I was looking for some holds. I don't think I got them.
Mm-hmm.
It might have been Matt Capps. Who knows?
Hey, it shows you were in the right mind. You were looking for holds, hopefully, you know, a specific category. You had some kind of strategic thinking in mind.
But you can't just punt value like that just to try and get holds and Everett Cabrera. Everett Cabrera didn't even end the season in the major leagues that year, by the way. He's back up now in that vaunted Padres lineup. So that is also one of my worst. What else you got, Brian?
Well, I think maybe not bad trades, just funny names that stick out to me that apparently I just relied
we love
on.
Names.
Yeah, just year in and year out, I relied on this guy, Chris Young, the pitcher, not the hitter. He's trying to make a comeback with the Mets at the moment, but yeah, I traded him twice, once in 2007. Get this trade though, I got quite a haul.
Got
right
a lot
here.
Of. You know, yeah. Sometimes it's quantity over quality.
Exactly.
If you know, can find the space in your roster.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this time I traded Chris Young straight up for three players for Barry Zito. This is back in 07, so he wasn't terrible yet. For Jonathan Papelbon, he was still an up and coming closer, and Bill Hall. I don't know what he did in 07. Maybe that was his, like 30.
He hits really well on Mother's Day.
Oh, that's very true. I must have done it on Mother's
Day. Right before Mother's Day.
Yeah. And then I also traded Chris Young again in 2009 in a deal that brought me back Aramis Ramirez. So that was a pretty good move.
Early on in my fantasy career, this is kind of tangent getting away from just the trade specific. We're talking about some of the worst trades we made in fantasy baseball as we're on our Stitches and Cowhide trade edition, MLB trade deadline, just all things Major League Baseball and trades. I had certain guys that were my go-to guys for some unknown reason.
Yep.
One of those guys early on in my fantasy baseball career, Lou Ford.
Wow. I know a lot of people that'd be pumped about that. Being from Wisconsin, there's a lot of Lou Ford fans around. You know, being in the Midwest, everyone loved Lou Ford on the Twins. So, yeah.
And Jock Jones. I know he's one of your guys.
He's one of my guys.
He wasn't really a guy to have on your fantasy team, though, necessarily. Later in his career, especially by the time we were playing fantasy baseball, Double J wasn't quite there.
Sometimes it's nice. You like to, you know, just imagine that their morale, their spirit just kind of improves your team somehow.
And I think
somehow.
That's what it was. Like, that's, you know, that's why you would have, you know, oh, yeah, Jason Kittle's my second catcher. He never plays. I play him day games after night games, but that's just about
it. Trying to justify it in some weird way. Yeah, Doug Mirabelli. I mean, every now and then there's a knuckleballer out there, and I need to have a catcher that...
There's some trades that we should look into in Tuck 7. The way Doug Mirabelli was tossed around like a rag doll for the only reason that he could catch a knuckleball. And, oh, my goodness, and teams were just held over a barrel for Doug Mirabelli.
Yeah.
The Padres had him at one point. For some reason.
Yep, you're right.
They signed Doug Mirabelli.
Then trade him right back?
Right. That's the thing. And they had all the power. I got to look this up. We got to get this. This is semi-live-to-tape radio right here.
And he used like a weird catcher's mitt, like a bigger catcher.
I was surprised that the National League in the All-Star game didn't try and sign him for the inning with R.A. Dickey.
I could have seen it. He was just a weird player to just see him in the transaction wire all the time.
Let's look at this. Here he is. Douglas Anthony Mirabelli.
His catcher's mitt looked like one that like the mascots use. That's
born
like...
October 18, 1970 in the beautiful hamlet of Kingman, Arizona. Or
you familiar?
All the gloves. I've driven through Kingman.
Okay.
Whew.
Nice country.
I didn't stop. Here's what we're looking at. December 7, 2005, the Red Sox trade Doug Mirabelli after they signed him the year before, trade him to the Padres for Mark Loretta.
Wow.
I'm not really sure why that happened.
How did they get Mark Loretta for him?
I'm not sure, especially considering from like 2003 to 2004. Yeah. Both those years, Loretta was the team MVP for the Padres. I'm not sure why they let him go there.
Right.
But then, less than a year later, on May the 1st, 2006, so a month into the very next season, the Padres traded him right back to the Red Sox for Josh Bard and Clay Meredith and some cash.
The Claw.
CLA. Olis was actually his name.
And what did he hit that year? Let's just see how,
this is
you
great.
Know, besides
well, here's
catching...
Here's my biggest problem. Let's talk trade philosophy here for just one second.
Sure.
They had the Red Sox over a barrel.
Oh, yeah.
The Red Sox needed somebody to catch Tim Wakefield.
Yeah.
And all Kevin Towers could do was get Josh Bard and Clay Meredith.
Yeah.
A sidearming slider specialist and Josh Bard.
Yeah.
That was a bad time for catchers for the Padres. They had a guy that you like a lot on those teams as well. You know where I'm going with this?
Let me see here. No, I don't know.
Same initials as Josh Bard. Played for your Cubs. Once got punched in the face in the dugout, I believe, by Carlos Zambrano, or at least they got into fisticuffs.
Michael Barrett?
Oh, different.
Those are different initials.
I was thinking Josh Barrett. But see, this is how on the same page we are. You knew who it was still.
You had me lost.
I was thinking of the B. Michael Barrett. You're right. I don't know where the J came from. Doug Mirabelli that year, 2006, which was his second to last year in the league, overall between the two clubs, hit... 199.
Oh wow! He was waltzing Mendoza.
He was waltzing. Waltzing Matilda, you come a waltzing Matilda with me, and it's ghost 199. 1989, he was waltzing Mendoza and not even coming close. 199 in 73 games, 202 plate appearances. He had a grand total of 35 hits, 7 doubles, 6 home runs. It's actually a pretty good percentage.
Yeah. Wow.
Wait a minute.
We must have forgotten how powerful he was.
He had a slugging percentage of .328 as he was hitting .191, but 13 of his 35 grand total hits were extra base hits.
Oh, he could find the gap.
I guess.
Yeah, no doubt.
How did we get on Doug Mirabelli?
It's a good question.
Holy cow, this has gotten out of control.
Well, that led to Michael or maybe Jermichael Barrett. So I'm not sure. Who knows what's up next?
Finley? Yeah. What is up next? What's coming up next is we'll break down some of the teams, the contending teams, Brian, that we're looking at, some of the interesting teams. Maybe they're in limbo. Maybe the A's, they're a team that, I don't know that they really expect it to be where they are right now with the way the plan is. Can they scrap the plan? Can they keep going with the plan and improve? Things like that. A lot of different teams that are still in contention this year. Extra spot up for grabs, of course, with the wild card. We will talk all of that right now on Stitches and Cowhide about the teams and the specific moves that they may need to make here over the next couple of days. Contending teams, Brian, are generally what you focus on, obviously, for the most part, at the trade deadline. Now, we've seen the what? The trade deadline. We've seen teams like the Rockies and the Royals make a deal that just switch pitcher for pitcher, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Jonathan Sanchez, Jeremy Guthrie, whatever. I think Jeremy Guthrie's in that song, too.
Yeah, he probably is, yeah.
Anyway. But generally, you're looking at teams that are trying to make a move within 5 games or so, or think they're still alive. It really comes down to the mindset of the ownership, the mindset of the leadership, rather, within a given team, whether or not they still think they've got a shot, and whether or not they think one move, two moves, any moves can put them over the top. Who's a team that you would be utterly surprised if they don't make a move by the time Tuesday, August 1st rolls around?
One team that I think we'll see make a move is the Cincinnati Reds. They've been looking at a few different things out there. One that really stands out to me is their left field spot. They've got Jay Bruce kind of cemented down there in right field. Not literally. That'd be really unfortunate for an outfielder to be in one spot.
Cement? Does he have a mountain of talent to go with that cement?
Okay. So back to my point, though. He's going to be a right fielder. Drew Stubbs has shown a lot of promise in center field. And then in left field, they have Ryan Ludwig and Chris Heisey kind of combining to handle the left field duties, that rare righty-righty platoon. And one thing I could see them do is add some speed and some on-base ability at the top of their order. And that's something that Juan Pierre's been able to do for the Phillies. Now, the Phillies are kind of in that weird mark. They've been contenders for the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. They've been a powerhouse. And they're at a point right now where they have a lot of guys that aren't performing quite to their ability, so they're not sure what to do. But I think Juan Pierre, you know, he's not a guy they're building around. They could definitely go ahead and trade him for something in return. And he would be a good fit out there. He could be a part-time player and share those spots with the other couple of guys. He can steal some bases. He can provide some speed at the top of the order ahead of guys like Brandon Phillips and Joey Votto and Jay Bruce, like we just mentioned. So that's something I could see happen.
So that's in the NL Central. What about you switch over to things in the AL Central, where it's contested between 3 teams? The Indians, they're slipping maybe just a little bit. They might not be a team. They might be the team with the greatest amount of needs when you just look at their lineup and the way they've done things kind of with chewing gum and scotch tape so far to get themselves to this point. Who do you see as the big move makers now? Detroit's already made a move. Who do you see as the big move makers in the AL Central?
Right, and like you mentioned before, the other player there is the White Sox, and they just don't have much to offer.
Right.
So I think that they desperately want to make a move. That they're kind of surprised themselves, I think, to really be in this hunt. I don't think they really have the pieces to make an impact move. The Indians are kind of that interesting team there. I was just looking at a few different stories before, and it sounds like they missed out on getting Josh Willingham before the season because they wouldn't offer that guaranteed third year, which the Twins, of course, were willing to offer. So that's a guy that would have fit very nicely into their lineup. They have a lot of lefties. They're regularly starting like 7 or 8 lefties in their lineup. So they're the worst hitting team against left-handed pitching in the majors. So it'd be really important for them to go ahead and add that right-handed bat. Maybe even something as simple, and I know this sounds kind of, you know, very simple and a small addition, but someone like a Ty Wigginton, someone that can play a few different spots out there, that can play the corners for them and be that right-handed bat that can, you know, kind of move some guys around when they're facing a tough lefty.
Now, you mentioned that the White Sox, when they look at where they are right now, they're kind of surprised. Another team that I think is legitimately surprised to be in contention, and I think right now they're half a game out within a game of the wild card and still within 6 games of first place in the American League West, is the Oakland A's. And when you find yourself in that situation, I think it's an interesting situation to be in, especially for a guy like Billy Beane, who always has a plan. I mean, you see Billy Beane, he got locked into a contract, so now he can have a plan in Oakland that extends out a few years with the signing of a Cespedes in the offseason and the bringing up of the young talent, which is the way the A's, of course, do business. So his plan was for a few years. But the guys have gelled. They've gotten a lot of really close wins that have kept them in things. And now maybe they're buyers at this point, when maybe they thought they might be able to sell a couple of things to get another piece, maybe some more prospects at this point. But now they're looking to maybe make an addition that will put them over the top and keep them in the race and maybe put them in the postseason. How do you weigh that? How do you balance that from a philosophy standpoint? And then what do you think the A's might do?
Yeah, I think personally the A's should go after Chase Headley. Just because right now they're playing guys like Brandon Hicks and Brandon Inge over there at third base. If you bring in Chase Headley, you know, the Oakland A's are, as everyone knows, a small market team. They don't have, you know, they don't have a lot of money, you know, supporting them, as everyone saw in Moneyball. So if you brought in a guy like Headley, he's going to be able to fill that third base hole for a couple years, and he's still very affordable. So, you know, he's not going to hurt the bank, and he's going to be a good productive hitter in the middle of the lineup, a guy that can help move guys around with Cespedes and with guys like Josh Reddick, who's playing really well this year.
At what cost? What are you willing to give up in your system? How much, if you're the A's, are you willing to give up? How deep into your system are you willing to go to get a guy like Chase Headley?
I think that you have to be willing to give up a valuable piece. Now, I'm not extremely familiar with what the A's have down in AAA, but I know that they've been able to continually bring up good pitching. Even their all-star this year was Ryan Cook, and he was a guy that kind of came out of nowhere actually through a trade. But, you know, they're able to continually bring up a lot of good relievers too. And the Padres right now, they're possibly entertaining trades for back-end relievers like Houston Street and Luke Gregerson. So maybe you go ahead and move one of those guys, and you can get a really good reliever back in return for Chase Headley.
Now, we've talked about the NL Central, the AL Central, now the American League West a little bit with some of the teams moving around. Let's stay out there in another tight race in the National League. Dodgers got out to the good start, as we mentioned. Giants came back to get them. The Giants are always a team that seems to be in their ballpark looking for some hitting. What do you see as the needs for the Giants right now to try and stay in the race and maybe overtake the Dodgers and stay on top of the Dodgers?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough market out there right now as far as trying to find a good right-handed hitter, and that's what a lot of these teams need. I know you're always talking about a left-handed hitter and putting a left-handed bat in the middle of your order, a left-handed pitcher. Right now, the thing that teams really need is that right-handed bat. They need a guy like a Josh Willingham who's not really available, it doesn't seem
like. And it would have to be the deal of a lifetime.
Right, exactly. But, you know, a guy like Afonso Soriano, if you're willing to take on some money, not all of his, you know, $40 million left, but if you're willing to take on some money, he's a guy, he's on pace, I think I saw, to hit 31 homers this year and to have an OPS of almost 800, of almost 850. So, you know, he's a guy that's going to be productive, and it'd be interesting to see if someone's willing to make that commitment. But he would be a good addition to a team like that to put him in the outfield along with Melky Cabrera and Angel Pagan and add a strong right-handed bat to that.
Well, what about the Dodgers on the flip side? They've already made a move that could be the big splash in Hanley Ramirez. What do you see them doing else? I mean, there's still room for improvement there. I mean, they're always looking for more help in that lineup and then maybe in the pitching staff as well.
Yeah, and something that I think would be a good move and something that would involve a few moving pieces would be Ryan Dempster and maybe a Brian LaHare. Dempster has said that the number one spot he wants to go is Los Angeles, and he has those 10-5 rights, so he can go ahead and veto a trade, which it sounds like he's already done to Atlanta. So that's the place he wants to go. It just depends on whether or not the Cubs are willing to get something in return. But maybe something to kind of spruce up that deal a little bit would be to include Brian LaHare. He could go over there and replace James Loney. Loney's really struggled this year. He's kind of been their guy at first base for a while now, but he's really struggled, and it looks like maybe his time's running out to prove his value. But if you bring over someone like Brian LaHare, that could boost their offense a little bit as well.
Now, you mentioned the Atlanta Braves, and we'll shift now to the NL East. And the Braves are a team that have been the subject of rumors, I think, from the very time when, you know, I don't know when it is officially that you start talking about the trade deadline, but whenever that was, the Braves were always a destination for starting pitching. They've needed started pitching. That is a well-known fact, and yet it still hasn't happened. They still haven't gotten that deal for a starting pitcher. Do you think they're still in the market for that? The market's still pretty wide open. Dempster's still available. Josh Johnson now, with the way the Marlins have gone, is available. So there's some arms out there, even to a lesser extent. Guys like Vargas out in Seattle that we talked about as well, and Millwood out there as well, that are available that the Braves could make a play on. Who do you see, and maybe what other holes do you see that the Braves have?
Sure, and the Braves, first of all, I just want to throw this out there. They've seemed to be a very smart organization over the years. They don't make a lot of, you know, head-scratcher type moves. So something I could see them doing, going after Dempster, I think, was a good thing, and they were willing to give up Randall Delgado for him, and I think that would have been a pretty fair trade both ways. But, you know, if they're not comfortable going with Randall Delgado or promoting Julio Teheran to take those innings, maybe going and getting someone like Wade Davis. He's not going to cost you a lot. Currently, he's relieving for the Tampa Bay Rays, but he could move back into that starter's role, and he's pitching very well this year. But, you know, another couple pitchers that they have, James Shields or Jeremy Hellickson. But, you know, I think they will go ahead and make a move and bring in a starter just to reinforce it. You don't want to be getting into October and relying on those rookies to provide you with those really important innings.
What about everybody else in that National League East? We talked about the Nationals right now who are on top in the NL East at this point. And then Atlanta, they're obviously contenders. Everybody else seems to be a seller. And I think throughout the whole first half of the season, we were thinking, all right, Philadelphia's going to make a move. Philadelphia's going to make a move. Philadelphia's going to make a move. And they never did. You see those bottom three teams in the NL East just remaining in kind of that seller role?
Yeah, I really do. I think that the Marlins at this point, they might as well go ahead and just trade everyone. You know, when you trade your franchise player, you trade a very good pitcher and a good second baseman. You know, I don't understand why you would do that and stop now. So I think they're going to go ahead and make a couple more trades. I think the Phillies, personally, I think they should kind of start over. Some of their players, not start over, I guess. They're not going to have the same rebuilding process that the Oakland A's were, or the Seattle Mariners. You know, they're not in that situation. But I think that they should go ahead and move guys like Placido Polanco when he gets off the deal. Guys like Juan Pierre, Ty Wigginton, Shane Victorino is going to be a free agent. Guys like that probably aren't going to be back or are going to cost quite a bit of money to bring back. Guys like Joe Blanton. So I think they should make some moves as well. And a team like the Mets, you know, they've played well this year. They haven't been bad. But I don't think that they really have the pieces to offer someone to make a really huge trade.
Now, staying in the East and moving to the American League, where the Yankees right now sit 8.5 games up on Baltimore, who we've talked about maybe shoring up something on the left side, both defensively and offensively. Toronto, we talked also earlier in the show, they need to make some sort of move, you would think, to try and get into the postseason any way, shape, or form, anything that they could do. Tampa Bay, they've had some success. They've had organizational success building up from within, and it seems like all of the rumors that you hear about Tampa Bay, you mentioned it there. Wade Davis might be on the block. Some of their other pitchers might be on the block. What is out there for the Rays to do to bring somebody in to improve, and what would you see them needing to do?
I think that they really need to go after a catcher. Right now they're using Jose Molina quite a bit of the time, and I think he's hitting under 200, so I think it'd be really important for them to bring in a guy like maybe take a flyer on someone like Giovanni Soto and see if he can kind of recapture that Rookie of the Year form.
How about you take a flyer on Benji?
Oh,
Molina.
There we go. Yeah,
I mean, that guy's got to be out there somewhere.
Oh, he's I'm sure
I don't know how he doesn't have a job.
No, I mean, he was always good behind the plate.
Exactly. Sorry. So, I stole some of your train of thought there with the Tampa Bay Rays. But, I mean, they're in kind of in a weird position there with Toronto as well. 9 games out, a little bit closer in the wild card as everybody else is. And then a team that is a real head-scratcher that nobody, I don't think, especially there, wants to see as sellers at this point. And maybe they stand pat and see what they can do with the team, with the players they have. And they already made a deal. This was a little bit before, but Kevin Youkilis leaving Boston. Boston's 10.5 out of the division. What do you see as the Red Sox needing to do?
Yeah, the Red Sox are in a tough situation. They have some contracts that they're not too happy with. It was rumored that they had offered Carl Crawford for Hanley Ramirez a couple weeks ago. So, you know, they're definitely trying to make some changes. They're just not exactly sure which way to go about it. Another person that's been tossed out there in rumors is Josh Beckett. And, you know, but at the same time, they're said to be looking for starting pitching. So, you know, I'm not really sure exactly what they're going to do. I really don't have a good feel for it at all. And so they're going to be an interesting team to watch here over the next 2 days and see if they make a decision. I think that they're just in a tough spot.
And let's backtrack, because I only gave you time apparently to talk about Cincinnati. Not really sure why I did that. In the NL Central, Pittsburgh's right there. They're two games back. And then, of course, St. Louis seeming to be a contender consistently. They lost Albert Pujols in the offseason. They're still right there, 6.5 games back. For those two teams, let's start with Pittsburgh. The watchword is have a winning season, have a record over .500. Where do you think the best help can come from for the Pirates at this point to continue and stay away from what was the second half basically collapse last year?
Well, I'm a little confused as to why the Pirates didn't go after Hanley Ramirez more. Maybe they weren't interested in his
his motivation of talent.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, his mountain of talent wasn't enough for them. Maybe they saw it as just foothills of talent.
Foothills of talent.
Yeah. So
the
I was
small rolling slopes of talent.
Exactly. So maybe that's what they saw it as. But he would have been a definite upgrade. He could have moved back to shortstop and taken over for Clinton Barmas and really added to the middle of that lineup. But you know, they decided not to go in that direction. Instead, they gave up some pretty valuable prospects for Wandy Rodriguez. So I think that really trying to boost the rotation would be important. When you get to the postseason, if you're relying on guys like Kevin Correa and Wandy Rodriguez and AJ Burnett, you're never quite sure what you're going to get from him. So, you know, there's a lot of names there that, you know, and I know you shouldn't just fall back on names and on reputation, but, you know, it'd be nice to have kind of that proven guy who's gotten it done in the clutch. I think that's something that'd be important for them to get.
What about the Cardinals? I mean, they're a team that you would feel like if the Cardinals really want to do something or really want to make it better from a monetary standpoint and usually from an organizational standpoint, organizational depth, I mean by that, they can go out there and get a deal and make a deal to get something done. Do they have that big of a need?
I think their bullpen could use some help. Bringing in a good left-handed reliever would be important, especially when you get into like a postseason setting where there's so many pinch hitters and so many, you know, specialty kinds of guys that are in play. It'd be nice to have that left-hander to fall back on. Mark Szczepanski has not pitched well this year. He's got an ERA around 5, and last year he was a very important piece for them. So I think that it'd be nice for them to bring in another left-handed reliever to help him out.
All right. To wrap up this segment, I want one team, and I'll give you mine first to give you a little bit of time to kind of jump in there. One team to stand pat and see what happens. One team that undoubtedly, without question, should be making a deal to do something to get better. For me, my team to stand pat, and they are my American League team, be the Oakland A's. They're a team right now that they've got a plan for the future, and obviously that's something to look at. But even now, with the way this team has won, it's been about the makeup of this specific team, the makeup of this specific group. They have a lot of guys that obviously are having seasons that are breaking out towards, you know, Josh Reddick comes over and he's having a great year for them as well. Yonas Cespedes, he's having a great year as their signee as well. But then also the chemistry and makeup of that team, I think, is very important. Heard Bob Melvin earlier this week talking about that. This team wins in the clutch, stays together, believes in each other together. So let's not mess it up and let's see how far that can actually take them. So that's my team that should stand pat. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to a team that should definitely make a deal to put themselves in the conversation and stay in the conversation, it's the Baltimore Orioles. Whatever they need to do to make sure that they can either get back into the AL East race, because you got to think the Yankees will start to come back at some point. They don't want to be outgunned in that race, and they can easily be outgunned by the Tampa Bay Rays and the Yankees. So they have to do something, whether it's shoring up on the left side, whether it's getting some more consistency in another starting pitcher that they want. They have to do something to give that fan base, like you said, that's been clamoring for it, a very storied franchise, to do something to get back into the playoffs, because that division down the stretch is just going to get tougher and tougher. The Pirates were an example of that last year. You see how much tougher it can get to win in the second half. So Baltimore has been a good story, but I think they need to get another piece, continue to get better to keep that moving forward. What about you? Here are your two teams. Give us your team that you think should stand pat.
Sure. The team I think should stand pat should be, and maybe I'm kind of expanding on the question a bit, but I think the entire AL Central. I don't, you know, I think that the Tigers are set up that they're probably going to win the division, and I think it's going to be so hard for Chicago or for Cleveland to come back and overtake that division. So
it's almost not worth it. What they would have to give up to get possibly a menial piece to maybe get into the playoffs, just mine. I see exactly where you're going with.
Right, exactly. That's exactly how I feel about it. So I just think that it would be the wrong move for them to go ahead and kind of sell the future and just try to get maybe that wild card spot. The team that I think should make a move to try to get better, and it's just kind of continuing what they've done so far, is the Dodgers. You know, with that new ownership coming in, they've gone ahead and made some moves. They made some signings, and I think they've done a really good job so far. They've put together a nice team, and I think they should really shore up that rotation and try to add another bat, and I'm not sure what that bat would be, but, you know, I think they should continue with that trend.
Those are the teams and the moves that we think need to be made, the team's rumors that are flying around. We've got two more segments left, and the first one that we're going to come up with is reminiscing a little bit about trades throughout history. And, Brian, I think we're going to have some fun with this one because we have fun talking about this. We talked about Doug Mirabelli. We kind of got into this already with Doug Mirabelli from Mayan for the Padres. And what we mean by this, Brian's a Cubs fan. I'm a Padre fan. You've got whatever team out there is your fan. And this would be great if we could take calls at this point. I mean, can you believe the phones would be literally off the hook right now?
Yeah.
What is the trade that you rue the day that you heard about it, that your team made? For me, the number one trade in the history of the San Diego Padres that I will forever and never forgive Kevin Towers for making, Oliver Perez and Jason Bay for Brian Giles.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard you harp on this deal a few times, and I can understand.
Jason Bay was not even the central player. Now no one should be mad that they've missed out on the last 6 years of Oliver Perez, 6 to 7 years. Ollie hasn't quite made it, obviously. That's not telling anybody anything. But Jason Bay was the throw-in, and I believe there was somebody else involved in this trade for the Padres and the Pirates at that point. Of course, I don't know why we had to mess with fate. We had Brian Giles exactly where he needed to be in small-town Pittsburgh, just not, you know, just off everybody's radar. But anyway, Jason Bay, Oliver Perez, and Corey Stewart, a minor leaguer for Brian Giles, who, in his years with the Padres, vaunted for his on-base percentage and what he could bring to a team that way, ended up hitting for a high 1 year, hit 284 that first year for the Padres, hit 301 with 119 walks and a booming 83 RBI the next year. I really don't like Brian Giles. So that, for me, is probably the worst trade in Padres history.
And people shouldn't forget that Jason Bay, you know, this isn't the New York Mets Jason Bay.
No,
this is the Bay that went on to play very well for the Pirates.
Now, and I guess you could say, well, the whole problem is now he's in a pitcher-friendly ballpark. He would have been there in San Diego. Maybe he wouldn't have ever put up those numbers. But still, Brian Giles was so overrated and terrible. It's just not even funny. Anyway, what do you got, Brian, for your Cubs bad deals?
Yeah, the one that stands out to me was probably my favorite season to be a Cubs fan, so that's probably why it stands out to me. But when the Cubs in 2003 traded for Aramis Ramirez, this was the season of Scott Bartman. So
Steve, that's all right. If I can call him Jermichael Bard, Jermichael Bartlett, you can definitely call him Scott Bartlett.
Jermichael Bartlett.
Plus, that's a portion of history that you've kind of tried to blur out.
I mean, I tried to blur it out. Yeah.
Well done.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I shuttled it right back to the beginning of the forefront of your consciousness. It's Steve Bartman. Remember, he leaned over and caught it. You guys were going to go to the World Series. Remember? Sorry. Go ahead.
My laugh is quickly going to turn to a cry here. I'm, you know, just bringing back all these horrible memories. But no. The trade was the Cubs acquired Aramis Ramirez, third baseman, Kenny Lofton in the outfield, and cash, mind you. For Jose Hernandez, Bobby Hill, who probably only diehard Cubs fans will remember, and some dude named Matt Brubeck. He might have been like a janitor or the team trainer. I have no clue. He never went on to do anything. So
was that Norm Cash?
Norm Cash?
Was it Norm Cash that they got him for? You said and Cash.
I don't think it was Norm. I don't think
was
it was Kevin
Tango?
Cash.
Tango
no.
And Cash?
No, I don't think. No, I think it was that literally money. The
oh,
currency.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Maybe traveler's check since it was a trade. But I don't know. It could have been any sort of currency, I suppose. But no, it was a very important trade. Ramirez at the time, he was still young. He was only 25. He had hit 263 in his 6 years as a Pirate, and he went on for the Cubs then to hit 294. He had an outstanding career with the Cubs. Now he's gone over to the dark side. Apparently he has something for the NL Central, and he's now with Milwaukee. But it was just an amazing trade. Kenny Lofton did really well that year and really helped them get to the playoffs, too, as that table setter. When Corey Patterson went down, it's just bringing back all these memories. It was a very, very good time to be a Cubs fan, and it was a great trade.
Norm Cash would have been 69 years old in 2003, so I don't think it was Norm Cash. For me, I'm going to stick with the bad. I'm racking my brain here. What was a good Padres trade? I don't know. I mean, they traded away Fred McGriff. Or no, they got Fred McGriff. I don't know. But another bad trade, and it was of not much consequence. Back in 2001, the Padres traded Woody Williams. You remember Woody Williams?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. He had a weird batting stance, too.
You would remember that about a pitcher.
He was so lackadaisical at the plate.
I do remember that now. You're right. Yeah. Woody Williams to the Cardinals for Ray Lankford and that same guy, Cash. He was 2 years. He was only 67 at this point. Norm Cash, the most traded player in the history of baseball. But anyway, so they traded him to the Cardinals for Ray Lankford. And Woody, on what was a going-nowhere Padres team, so it was of no consequence, but he was a fan favorite. He was a pitcher that could actually win a game. He went on in St. Louis to go 7-1 with a 2.28 ERA the rest of that season. Meanwhile, Ray Lankford for the Padres in 2001 hit .252 overall that year. For the Padres specifically, he did manage to hit .288 and had four home runs in 40 games. That was one every 10. And then by 2002, he was down to hitting .224, six home runs in 81 games, and didn't play all of 2003.
Okay.
I was not happy with that trade.
No, I mean, as a child. Like,
I mean, Woody was a great guy.
And he was named after that Toy Story character, right?
Actually, his real name was Gregory Scott.
Really?
Williams.
We're pulling out all of the real names here on Stitches and Cowboy. You brought up Larry Chipper Jones,
Wayne Chipper Jones, yes.
We got all kinds of birth certificates here that we're going through, by the
Absolutely.
Way, to provide you with the best information possible.
What else you got on Cubs trade throughout history? Any trade that sticks out? You had a good trade and a good time in Cubs history. Is there one that just kind of rankles you?
Yeah, rankles is the right word. One that stands out to me. I remember calling my dad the moment that I saw this trade had happened was when the Cubs traded Mark DeRosa to the Indians a couple years ago. They traded him to the Indians, and they got a few minor leaguers back, none of whom ever went on to do anything for the Cubs or anyone else, as far as I remember. I don't have the details pulled up, but I think it was for, like, Jeff Stevens and a couple other guys. Anyways, that was after Mark DeRosa.
Norm Cash.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I'm sure it was him. That was after DeRosa had a couple of great years at Wrigley. He was playing so many positions. He could play second. He could play third, corner outfield. He was doing just so well. He was really a fan favorite. So that was really a frustrating one to see happen, especially when you're getting back, you know, no top prospects. It just kind of was a head scratcher as to what's the point of moving him now. So, that was one that stands out to me. There's been a lot of weird Cubs trades over the years.
Mark DeRosa traded for Chris Archer, John Gobb, and Jeff Stevens.
And Chris Archer goes into part of another deal that I didn't think was a great one. Chris Archer then came to the Cubs, of course, with that trade. He was then part of the deal that went down to Tampa Bay to bring back Matt Garza. And that was one of the last trades that Jim Hendry made as the GM of the Cubs. And probably because he brought in Matt Garza to be on a team that everyone kind of knew was not going to be good last year or this year. And newsflash, they're not any good either of these last 2 years. So, you know, it was kind of like everyone knew that the Cubs were going through a rebuilding process besides their GM. So that was, you know, kind of weird,
right.
Kind of frustrating.
He wasn't on board. He didn't get the memo.
I guess not.
Just to kind of wrap up, I kind of just threw it out there and stuck it against the wall about Fred McGriff. He was traded to the Padres from the Blue Jays in 1990 in the offseason. With Tony Fernandez, so the Padres got the haul of Tony Fernandez of Fred McGriff, and they let go Roberto Alomar and Joe Carter.
Yeah.
A borderline Hall of Fame second baseman.
He's in now.
He's in the Hall of Fame. A Hall of Fame second baseman and Joe Carter, who was a pretty good hitter in the 90s.
Yeah, a pretty clutch hitter, too, if I recall. That was a doozy.
Touch them all, Joe. Touch them all. You'll never have a bigger hit, or whatever the call was.
Yep.
So those are some of the trades throughout our time as Cubs and Padres fans. I'm sure you've got your trades that you rue the day, as we mentioned. And since he's here, since I've already got it pulled up.
Who, me?
No. Let's see. Maybe he wasn't traded because this was before. Let's see. Norm Cash traded twice.
Mm-hmm.
Norm Cash, of course, for the uninitiated. I think Brian is wondering who this guy is. Played for the White Sox, the Tigers, from 1958 through 1974. He played first base.
It was a bit before my time.
I knew that. It was a little bit before my time, too. 377 home runs, .271 lifetime hitter, .1103 on the RBI. So, you know, he's kind of like Joe Carter. He's a Joe Carter of the 60s. Maybe people out there that actually saw him play think that's idiotic, but that's what I'm seeing on his stats. And he was traded twice with Bubba Phillips and John Romano to the Cleveland Indians for Dick Brown, Don Farinese, and Manny Minoso, along with Jake Stricker.
Some interesting names in that.
Manny Minoso.
Interesting first names.
Yeah.
Manny, Norm, Bubba.
Bubba. Yeah. And then he was traded for Steve Demeter.
The Hooter?
Cleveland to the Tigers. Yeah. And that segment kind of just fizzled to an end there, but that was trades throughout history. I'm sure you've got your trades. We will bring this show to a much more rousing conclusion now as a Stitches and Cowhide must-have. I cycled through quite a few different segments that we would have on Stitches and Cowhide, everything from Waltzing Mendoza, which we've referenced, talking about some of our favorite baseball theme songs, keeping an eye on Livon Hernandez with Talking a Little Livon. But one that we always do is Tomorrow's News Today.
What if you knew, beyond a doubt, what was going to happen tomorrow? Tomorrow's News Today.
A lot can happen, and a lot's going to happen before the deadline rolls around on July the 31st. But when we're sitting here, maybe not here, but when we're sitting where we're sitting on August the 1st...
Oh, I'll be sitting somewhere.
What is going to be the biggest trade that we've seen? What is going to be the biggest news that we see come out of the rest of this deadline?
You want me to really go out on a limb here?
I really want you to go out on a limb, take your mountain of talent, your mountain of brain power, wade in the water, go out on a limb. What was the other one you used? Cement yourself into this opinion and tell me what Tomorrow's News Today is going to be.
Okay. I'm gonna go ahead and go out there. I think it'll be Josh Johnson to the Texas Rangers. I think that the Rangers I know that they want a pitcher. If they're not able to find someone out there at a reasonable price or someone that really fits what they need, they could probably go to an internal option and use Martin Perez in that rotation, a rookie. They could use Alexi Agando, bring him back from the bullpen and put him into the rotation. But Josh Johnson, a guy that can go out there and really be that stopper and kind of share the ace duties with Yu Darvish coming down the stretch. So I think he'd be a really good fit there. And, you know, the Marlins are going through that process of reevaluating or whatever you want to call it that they're doing at this point. Maybe a fire sale, you know, whatever vocab you want to put on it. But, I think that now is the time for them to trade him and get as much as they can.
And that would be big, not just from a name standpoint. Obviously, Josh Johnson's a big name and a big chip, but that's a team in first place getting even better. And I think that makes even a bigger deal when a team like the Rangers, who not only is a team in first place right now, but a team penciled in to be yet again in a World Series or at least fighting for it, when they can get even better with a trade like that with a guy like Josh Johnson and put a hard-throwing big pitcher under the tutelage again of Nolan Ryan, and that's just going to make that team so much better. So I'm right on board with you. That would be some pretty big news. Brian? Has this been a fun and exhilarating experience here talking about trades ad nauseum here? However long this entire episode has been, it's just flown by.
It's been great. It's been a good time. It's always good to come back and sit down and speak face to face instead of over the phone. You know, So this has been a great talk.
We'll have to do this again. We'll have to do a couple of more, maybe some abbreviated Stitches and Cowhide by way of promotion with you. Maybe you on the phone a couple of times, but we'll have to get in here start of September. We'll call that a special push towards the playoff edition, and we'll recap how everything's going at that point as things are shaking out. And then, of course, when we roll around to October, we'll have to see if our schedules will allow and, of course, the weather will allow us to get together and talk about the playoffs themselves.
All kinds of possibilities on the horizon.
All kinds of possibilities on the horizon. Brian, any final thoughts on this trade deadline 2012 edition of Stitches and Cowhide?
It's going to be interesting. You know, with the new rules out there, it's going to be fun to see what kind of moves really happen.
Brian bringing his mountain of talent with him to Stitches and Cowhide, and all of us just firmly cemented in the belief that this tandem right here, Brian Reuter and yours truly, J.W. Cox, can bring you some high-quality radio anytime that we sit down together and fire up the microphone. That's been Stitches and Cowhide. Thanks for listening. Get us on iTunes and online at broadcastforhire.com. You never know when we might hit you with another episode. Happy speculating on all the trades and deals. For Brian Reuter, I'm J.W. Cox.
This has been a production of the Palapan Sports Network.